Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week grew up in West Bloomfield, Michigan, and earned a bachelor's in general studies from the University of Michigan and a JD from Detroit College of Law. After practicing law for 13 years, she was elected as a district court judge for the 48th District Court in Michigan. 18 years later, she's just begun her fourth term on the bench. She's also served 8 years as chief judge of the 48th District Court. Her name? The Honorable Judge Kimberly Small. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to the Honorable Judge Kimberly Small. Judge, welcome. A real honor to have you.
Jack, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm actually very excited. I love what you do here.
Thank you. Can we start by talking about your childhood and your grandmother?
Ah, thank you. My grandmother's one of my favorite topics. My grandmother was just a marvelous woman who was a huge influence on my life. She died at 97 years young. She was incredibly sharp up until the day she died. She was the one that used to call me and keep me up on current events. This was a woman that believed that how you look at the world is the type of world you have. My childhood, that's a little bit more of a complex topic. I was not the kid that grew up feeling strong and secure. I was the kid that unfortunately was racked with insecurities for a myriad of reasons. And at the time, of course, it was very painful. But what I've realized, which is very much in keeping with my philosophy today, is that your weaknesses become your strengths. And what I mean by that is that throughout my childhood, because of the pain that I was feeling, at about the age of 17, I had a very serious decision to make for myself. And that decision was how to get myself out of that pain. So I started on a quest. And that quest has shaped absolutely who I am today. And the quest was this. It was how to create a life that I love to lead. How is it that some people go through things in their worlds that are very difficult and challenging things to go through? And how is it that they turn those into positives? How they turn it into a quest for real knowledge and awakening? And that's what I did. And I started reading anything I could get my hands on, any empowering tape series, books, and things of that nature to build who I was.
Judge, at different times in our lives, God sends us angels. When you were 13, God sent you an angel by the name of Hella Book. It changed your life.
Oh, she sure did. I was not on the most empowering path at that point in my life. My parents were going through a very difficult divorce. And I felt like I didn't belong anywhere or wasn't part of anything. And I had started to surround myself with people that were doing things that were going to lead them to very dark places. And regardless of whether or not I was engaged in the same behavior, this was at the age of 13. Hella, who was working at the school at the time, she came to me. She took the time to care about me. And she pulled me aside, and she said, "Kim, let me tell you what I see." And in fact, it's interesting. I use these same words in court today. This is how big of an impact this woman had on my life. She said, "Let me tell you what I see. I see a very smart, very capable young lady that's making some decisions for herself that are going to be devastating." I respected Hella enough that I really thought about what she said to me, took some real time to reflect, and I realized that she was right. So I separated myself from the people that I was surrounding myself with, because I believe that you either rise to the level of the people you surround yourself with or you'll fall to their level. And I decided to walk into the cafeteria sit down at a table all by myself. Until about a week later, a young lady named Jackie Hunt came and sat next to me, and she was my first real positive friend. So I credit Hella with, in large part, where I am today, because she made me realize that I had to be very deliberate about my world.
You got a bachelor's in general studies from the University of Michigan, and then you enroll at Detroit College of Law. You become a night student for 3.5 years while working full-time. How'd you ever do it?
Oh, my. You talk about angels coming into your life. I'll tell you how it ended up happening that way. I actually started as a day student. And then soon thereafter, I was working for the Michigan Attorney General's office during the summer, and I went in to say hello to a girlfriend of mine who was working for a judge named George LaPlata. Said hello to Karen. Later on that day, I get a phone call from her, and she says, would you consider working during the day and going to school at night? The judge liked you very much. I am leaving my position and would like you to come on as his clerk. And that was divine intervention, and let me tell you why. He turned out to be one of the most positive forces in my life. He was a bird colonel in the Marine Corps and had just this marvelous outlook on life. He believed in God, country, family, and he was so staunch about it and was such a solid man that he taught me so many amazing values that I carry with me every single day of my life. So yes, I worked full-time during the day, went to school at night. It was tough. I would go to work in the morning. I would drive down to Detroit College of Law. I would typically change my clothes in the parking lot, and then I would walk into school, be done with school at about 9:30, stop at the gym, work out for an hour, go home, and then I would do my homework, wake up, and do it all again.
We're talking to Judge Kimberly Small, who then went on to practice law for 13 years. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Rasula, and we're with Judge Kimberly Small, who has been the chief judge of the 48th District Court for the last 8 years. Judge, I've heard it said that the profession of law is a calling.
For me, it was a calling, but it was a delayed calling. I actually ended up in law after I didn't particularly do well in biochemistry in the Interflex program at the University of Michigan. And I think I when you say calling for me, I grew up with lawyers. My grandfather was a lawyer. My uncle's a lawyer. My father's a lawyer. And I think that I rejected the practice of law simply because it seemed that that was the default position for me. And interestingly enough, my daughter, who is just finishing up her first year at Northwestern Law School, had the same process. And it is a calling. After I realized that it really was where my talents were, I then embraced it, and I realized one of the reasons that I went towards law is because I hated injustice. I deplored injustice, and obviously as a judge, you have the ability to mete out justice every single day.
You practiced law for 13 years, and then you decide to become a judge. Why?
I practiced law in a lot of different arenas. I was a prosecutor for Oakland County for many years, obviously protecting victims and protecting the community. I then went on and I did some medical malpractice work and some divorce work, domestic work. And I was a staff attorney for a federal judge, and that was also George LaPlata, who then, after his circuit court stint, was appointed by then-President Reagan to become a federal judge. And after all of that, I needed to make a decision on which way I wanted my career to go, and I had some tremendous encouragement, and it was really George LaPlata and Judge Bernie Friedman, two just tremendous role models for me and real mentors who encouraged me to run for the bench. This was a seat that Bernie Friedman once held. And I frankly wasn't going to do it at first, and then gave it about 4 months of real soul searching. And I decided that I was really, as they say, I was going to put my money where my mouth was and stand up and run for this seat. I had absolutely no idea what that looked like. I had never been involved in politics before. But obviously, I was able to communicate to the public my real passion and the reasons that I wanted this position, which they believed were the right reasons. And that was to protect the public and to mete out justice in a way that was fair, impartial, and yet also hold people accountable for their actions.
Socrates believed that a great judge had four traits: hear courteously, answer wisely, consider soberly, and decide impartially. Please.
Socrates is one of my favorites. What this means to me is that first and foremost, to treat people with respect and to remember that their case, the one in front of you at that moment, is the most important case, and to consider it as if it were your only case, because this is the one and only time these people, whoever it is that's standing in front of a judge, has, it's the only time they have in front of you. Courteously means you listen, and you listen with open ears. Answer wisely and consider soberly, and decide impartially. That means to me that you need to consider and to decide in a way that is fair. It's about fundamental fairness to each and every person that stands before you.
You've also served as the chief judge on the bench for 8 years. What does this role entail?
The chief judge is the judge that is responsible for, if you will, all of the business aspects of the court. I am blessed at the 48th District. We have just a phenomenal staff that care deeply about what they're doing. And we have about 35 to 40 employees at this time. We have a $4.5 million budget. And really, the role of the chief is to make sure that the public is getting the best service that they possibly can. The other piece of it, of course, and I take very seriously the trust that the public puts in myself as chief and the three judges on the bench, which is myself, Judge DiAgostini, and Judge Barron. It is really a position of public trust. The money that is given to the court is the taxpayers' money, and I run it very much like a well-oiled machine, if you will, making sure that the costs are as low to the taxpayers as possible, which is a bit of a challenge because running a business where you have no control over revenue, just your expenses, it's a little bit of a challenge, but it is it's a very important role, and I take it very seriously.
We're talking to Judge Kimberly Small, who is a master at steel and velvet. Kim, each day in your courtroom, you see the entire gamut of emotions. Fear, shame, madness, brashness, remorse, hope, uncertainty, embarrassment, denial. How do you handle that?
It is true. We see, as judges, we see all of that. And I loved your opening to this particular segment, Steel and Velvet. I have a reputation as being tough. And it's a reputation, I believe, that is tough and fair. I really see my job as twofold. Number one, I see my job as first and foremost always protecting the public. But then there's a second piece of this. And the second piece of this particular job is to do the best I can to make sure that the people that are in front of me are on a much more empowering path when they leave than the one that led them to the courtroom. And sometimes that's can be very challenging. I have chosen to stay at this level of court system, even having many opportunities to go to different courts, including federal court. And the reason I stay at the district court level is because I get an opportunity to reach into people's lives before they, as I like to say, major league mess them up. I get to reach into their lives. I'm dealing mostly, I do a fair amount of felony work, but most of the cases that I sentence on are misdemeanor cases, which means that I can't give somebody more than a year in jail. And why is that important for me? What's important for me is because this is the place where I think you impact people on such a grand level, because if you can get them to wake up and see the error of their ways before they move on to commit a felony which may land them in prison for a substantial amount of time, you've saved a life. So the way I approach my job is to do everything I can to, number one, get people to take personal responsibility for themselves and their actions, and to help them see where they need to make changes in their lives and to raise their standards.
We're talking to Judge Kimberly Small. Judge, if there's someone listening tonight who drinks and or uses drugs and then drives, what would you say to that listener?
Well, if it's okay, I'd like to change the question just a touch. And that is, what would I say to somebody who drives drunk? There is nothing wrong with responsibly, and I underscore the word responsibly, consuming alcohol and operating a motor vehicle. There is a reason for the 0.08 blood alcohol level, which deems you drunk. So what would I say to somebody who is considering driving drunk or driving under the influence of drugs? I'd say pick up the telephone that's in your purse, if you're a female, or in your pocket, if you're a male, and make a telephone call. There is even an app for that now. What most people don't think about is really the consequences of driving drunk or under the influence. When you see what I see so often, people who have committed this crime and have caused injury to somebody or has taken the life of somebody, once you do that, it's too late. Most people do intend, when they drive under the influence, to get from point A to point B. But the statistics are staggering on those that don't and the number of people that are killed and injured. You do not get to roll the dice on our lives. So what I would say is simply don't.
We're talking to Judge Kimberly Small. When we come back, we'll ask her about Bill Wilson and how he changed the world. And I'm Jack Grissel, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Grissula, and we're with Judge Kimberly Small, who has shared her messages of critical life choices and cool to be clean to over 20,000 local students. Kim, Bill Wilson, the founder of Alcoholics Anonymous and the 12 Steps, please.
If I can just go back for one moment, the cool to be clean and the critical life choices. I love what I do on the bench, but I love what I can do through the bench into the community. And those are two programs that I am particularly proud of. And what it is designed to do is to help our kids think. It's typically presented to the eighth graders. And it is designed to do just that, to help them think so they can make wise choices in their lives. So thank you for mentioning those two programs. As it relates to Bill W., as he is commonly called, and the 12-step program, I think he developed a program that it was just simple brilliance, sheer brilliance. It's a program that helps people to genuinely own their lives, to take a look at who they are, what they are, the demons that are inside of them. As most people know, alcoholics and people who use drugs, they do in large part to move away from the pain that they feel inside. So then the question becomes, why so much pain? And the answer is always the same. It is the way that they look at their lives. People will often say, well, it's because of the way I was raised and my parents did this, that, whatever it looks like. But the bottom line is, at the point in their lives where they become alcoholics. It is their responsibility to create their own lives. The things that they will blame or pin on their pain, those are events that happened years ago and that are over. It's how they're viewing those events that's causing the pain in their lives. And Bill W. putting together these 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous literally put together a roadmap to help people clean out the garbage, if you will, the things that are causing them pain, and help them focus their brains in a way that empowers them.
We're talking to Judge Kimberly Small. Judge, you live in two worlds. One in the courtroom, it's a tale after tale of woe, excuses, etc. And then you're an extremely positive thinker. So it's a dichotomy. How do you balance the two?
Oh, it's a blessing. It is a blessing. Because you are right. I live in a world where people do want to or tend to make excuses. They tend to want to keep stuck where they're at, in large part because they're comfortable. They're in denial. But given the, and I'll use your words, the positive way I think, I have an ability to be able to hold a mirror up to them, and this is the velvet part of what you were talking about, in a way that I believe is communicates trust to them, so they know that I genuinely care about them, and I do. And it is an ability for me to probe into their worlds and to help them see the light, if you will.
In your office, you have a credenza behind your desk, and you have 12 books on that credenza. 7 of them are on faith. The Gospel of John, 365 readings from Judaism, the Bible, the New Union Prayer Book, 7 of the 12 on faith. Kim, why?
I never quite chronicled that. You are observant. I am hugely faith-based. Hugely faith-based. I feel that my life is guided by God's hand. God helped me get out of the dark and into the light, and has put me in a position and blessed me where I can genuinely impact people. And I feel like I am every day committed to fulfilling His will.
In the courtroom, at your desk, you have 3 little stones. One says wisdom, one says truth, and one says faith. Why those 3?
Wisdom, and I'll go right back to your quote from Socrates, that goes into the answer wisely. The other one, the truth, I believe that a courtroom is a search for the truth. It shouldn't be about gamesmanship. It should be a search for the truth. The last one, faith, I believe in anchors, and that's what the stones are there for. It keeps me rooted in my belief system. Faith, we've already talked a little bit about, but the reason that stone is there, so there's another thing that I believe very strongly about faith, and that is that once you're in faith, you cannot have fear standing side by side with you. You can't be in faith and fear at the same time. And I think it's destructive, regardless of who we are or what we are or where we are, to live our lives from fear. Fear is good when you are physically in danger. Beyond that, fear constricts. It makes people less creative, less loving. And my belief is that if you live in faith, you can live through love.
I've been amazed, Kim, through the years when I talk to college coaches, high school coaches, and they remember every kid that played for them, whether they were a star or never left the bench, 30, 40 years later. Do you remember any of the people that have come before you?
I may not remember names, but I sure remember people's faces and people's stories. I'm so blessed. I have in my office, behind a door, so you didn't notice them, I have huge binders of letters that people have sent me throughout the years, and there's thousands of them, and I am so grateful to each and every person who took the time to write and express how I have helped them. So yes, there's so many. And one of my favorite stories is I was in a Starbucks and a gentleman came up to me and he was holding a little 2-year-old baby. And he looked at me and he reintroduced himself and reminded me of his story. And he looked at me and said, "I would not be the man I am today holding this child if it weren't for you. And for that, I just am so grateful and I feel so blessed."
The hundreds or thousands of lives that have been turned around because of appearing in front of you, turned around for the good, what do those lives have in common, Kim?
First and foremost, when people thank me, my first answer to them is, I want to thank you. It was not me. It was you who opened your eyes and you that was willing to take responsibility for your life and to build a life that was much more empowered than the one that you were living when you stepped into the courtroom. So it's those acts of bravery every single day that I see in my courtroom when people are willing to open their eyes and to change. That takes courage. So to them, I say thank you.
In addition to being this chief judge, having close to 15,000 cases a year, speaking to 20,000 kids, you also do an awful lot of community work, giving back. Why?
I do. I am wired to help people to the best of my ability, to give. And I just finished a wonderful experience on the commission. We commonly call it the Poverty Commission through the state. And that is a commission that's got just an awful name. So I'm not going to bore anybody with the name itself. But it's the commission that is charged with doing everything we can to eradicate poverty. And I served on that commission because I wanted to be able to help people and lift them. I believe in raising our standards and living a life that is, and I'll use this word a lot, but empowered. For people to create a life to use their God-given potential, I believe that we all can wake up every morning and feel real joy. And what does that mean? Well, some people will say, well, that means a better job or it means happy. But what it means is it means to wake up and really feel like you're doing what you should be doing and where you should be doing it at the level that you can be doing it. Getting a better level of awareness today than we had yesterday. And I'm wired to do all I can to help people live lives that they really love to lead.
We're talking to Judge Kimberly Small, and each time she's had to run for election, her campaign slogan has been, "Think big, vote small." And I'm Jack Rasul, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to the Chief Judge of the 48th District Court, Judge Kimberly Small. Judge, if there's a parent listening tonight with 3 or 4 kids, and I have a son or a daughter who's a prodigal child.
There's a quote that I love, and it's, "Those kids that seem to deserve love the least need it the most." First and foremost, I would say, you have to hit the issues head on. Get professional help if you need it. If you're dealing with a drug or alcohol issue, it's something that you cannot bury your head. You need to hit it head on. And you know, given that there are so many different circumstances, what leads a child down the wrong path, know that your kids want boundaries and need boundaries. Obviously, a boundary for a 10-year-old is going to be different than a boundary for an 18-year-old or a 20-year-old. But the premise is the same in terms of setting some real lines in the sand of what you'll accept, what you won't accept. If the child is still living under your roof, you get to set some rules as to what's acceptable and what's not. And the one thing I would say is never to enable a child. There are many parents who will come in that are with kids that are in front of me that are, you know, 20, 21, that are still living at home, and the parents are accepting behavior that is just simply unacceptable and not forcing a child to change.
That quote that you gave a minute ago about that the children that need the most love or deserve it the least need it the most. Every day you see moms and grandmothers in your court with unconditional love. Talk to us about moms and unconditional love.
Well, I happen to be one of those moms that certainly knows everything about unconditional love. And I think that as parents, we do love our kids and should love our kids unconditionally. But that doesn't mean that you tolerate behavior that is unacceptable. In fact, unconditional love, real love, means not tolerating behavior that is unacceptable, destructive.
I once heard that the only thing that gets a boy from 18 to 25 is grace. This man defined grace as the grip of God in spite of yourself. You see grace regularly. Tell us about grace.
Oh, I do. I see grace every day. Every day when I see somebody who finally starts to understand what's been happening in their world and is opening themselves up. I see grace every day when somebody comes in front of me having operated a motor vehicle under the influence, that they're in front of me just simply for an operating under the influence and by the grace of God has not killed anybody. So yes, I see grace every single day.
Anybody that meets you, Kimberly Small, says, wow, this woman has terrific courage. How do I get that courage?
That's an interesting question. I'm not so sure I've ever really stopped and thought of myself as that courageous. I do know one thing that's important to me, and that is to face my fears. So when you talk about courage, it's courage is doing the right thing and being able to look in the mirror and respect the standards that you're living by. Courage is facing your fears head on. Once you face a fear head on, it no longer becomes fear. It dissipates, holding up it to the light of day. So when I think of, you sort of threw me a bit, Jack, with that question, because I've never really stopped to think of myself as courageous. But I suppose as I'm sitting here reflecting, there have been many times in my life where I have shown real courage. And it was about, for me, standing up and doing the right thing.
Another thing I admire you about is a lot of judges, the power goes to their head. You've stayed humble with great power.
Oh, thank you for that. I know I have a job to do. I don't define myself by my title. I have a job to do. I love what I am able to do from the bench. I love what I'm able to do in the community. And to the contrary, I feel humbled and blessed to be able to have this position and to serve my community in the capacity that I do. I love my community. I grew up in my community. I raised my kids in my community. And I feel blessed that they keep saying, yes, Judge, we want you to continue in your job.
Politicians are natural campaigners. They're always raising money. It's part of their DNA. Judges, not so. And every 6 years, you've got to become a campaigner. How do you do that?
Well, if you're talking just from the money aspect of it, you are right. Judges are in a different pool than the rest of the political world. judges have to start every single campaign cycle with $0 in their campaign coffers, so to speak. We don't have coffers. We have an empty bank account when we're done. At the end of the cycle, all of the money that we've raised either is spent or, in my case, given back to the people that gave it to me. We have to end up at the election cycle at the end of it with a zero balance. So it's sort of a sprint. When you find out you have opposition, which I did this year, this past election cycle, you sprint to raise the money. But if you, as a sitting judge, if you have had the privilege of serving your community, you should typically have been out in the community enough where you're entrenched enough that people know your body of work. Maybe not necessarily in the courtroom, but certainly out of the courtroom, and you have a reputation that hopefully precedes you.
As our time winds down together this evening, Judge Small, what advice would you give to our young listeners?
The first thing I would say is be very deliberate about creating your life and understand that you are the one that creates it. As much as your parents have poured into you, and parents, you know, they love their kids, they load them up with hopefully lots of good stuff and good values, and bottom line is that it is always our responsibility to build our own lives, and it's no different than our young people. Make wise decisions, make them consciously. One of the best decisions you will ever make in your lifetime is who you surround yourself with. We started out by talking about my 97-year-old grandmother. She used to say that she always only wanted to surround herself with people that are 15 or 20 years younger than her. Why? Because she wanted to stay alive and engaged. I would also say live by standards that you respect, because life's kind of simple. If you do things that you feel good about, you get to feel good inside. And know that the decisions that you're making today will affect your life long term. And lastly, I would say, know that you are worth having a life, living a life that you love.
Judge Kimberly Small, what a shining example of steel and velvet. Thanks for sharing your amazing and inspiring story. Please keep up the great work.
Thank you, Jack. It has been a pleasure to be here.
Please join us next Sunday. Until then, I'm Jack Krasula. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spohom. Believe in yourself.